At first, Nynaeve simply stood in one spot, studying the hut's interior. There was little to see, aside from the obvious. A second three-legged stool, a rough table holding a flickering lamp, a green teapot and a second cup, a rude stone fireplace with cold ash on the hearthstone. That was all. The hut was so small it only took Nynaeve a step to reach the table. Dipping her finger into the teapot, she touched it to the tip of her tongue, then spat vigorously and emptied the whole teapot onto the table in a wash of tea and tea leaves. Elaine blinked wonderingly. "What happened?" Van Deen asked coolly from the door. Lan moved to bar her way, but she stopped him with a small gesture. Elaine started to put an arm around her and received another raised hand to keep her back. Van Deen's eyes remained on her sister, calm in a face of Aes Sedai serenity. The dead woman on the cot might as well not have existed. "When I saw all of you heading this way, I thought... we knew we didn't have many years remaining, but..." Her voice sounded serenity itself, but small wonder if that was a mask. "What have you found, Nynaeve?" Sympathy looked odd on Nynaeve's face. Clearing her throat, she pointed to the tea leaves without touching them, to white shavings among the matted black leaves. "This is crimson thorn root," she said, trying to sound matter-of-fact and failing. "It's sweet, so you might miss it in tea unless you know what it is, especially if you take a lot of honey." Van Deen nodded, never taking her eyes from her sister. "Adelius developed a taste for sweet tea in Ebudar." "A little kills pain," Nynaeve said. This much kills, but slowly, even a few sips would be enough." Taking a deep breath, she added, "They might have remained conscious for hours, not able to move, but aware. Either whoever did this didn't want to risk someone coming too soon with an antidote, not that I know one for a brew this strong, or else they wanted one or the other to know who was killing them." Elaine gasped at the brutality, but Van Deen simply nodded. "Ispan, I think, since they appear to have taken the most time with her." The white-haired Green almost seemed to be thinking aloud, working out a puzzle. Cutting a throat took less time than driving a stake through someone's heart. The calm of her made Elaine's skin crawl. "Adelius would never have accepted anything to drink from someone she didn't know, not out here with Ispan. Those two facts name her killer in a way. A dark friend, and one of our party. One of us." Elaine felt two chills, her own and Brigitte's. "One of us," Nynaeve agreed sadly. Avienda began testing the edge of her belt knife on her thumb, and for once Elaine felt no objection. Van Deen asked to be left alone with her sister for a few moments and sat on the floor to cradle Adelius in her arms before they were out of the door. Jame, Van Deen's gnarled old warder, was waiting outside with a shivering Christian. Suddenly a wail burst out inside the hut, the full-throated cry of a woman mourning the loss of everything. Nynaeve, of all people, turned to go back, but Lan laid a hand on her arm, and Jame planted himself before the door with eyes not much warmer than Lan's. There was nothing to do but leave them, Van Deen to shriek her pain, and Jame to guard her in it. "And share it," Elaine realized, feeling that knot of emotions in her head that was Brigitte. She shivered, and Brigitte put an arm around her shoulders. Avienda did the same from the other side, and motioned for Nynaeve to join them, which she did after a moment. The murder Elaine had thought of so lightly had come. One of their companions was a dark friend, and the day suddenly felt cold enough to shatter bones, but there was a warmth in the closeness of her friends. The last 10 funereal miles to Camelin took 2 days in the snow, with even the windfinders decently subdued. Not that they pushed Marilla any less hard. Not that Kin stopped talking, and falling silent whenever a sister or one of the knitting circle came near. Van Deen, with her sister's silver-mounted saddle on her horse, appeared as serene as she had at Adelius's graveside, but James' eyes carried a silent promise of death that surely rode in Van Deen's heart, too. Elaine could not have been happier to see the walls and towers of Camelin if the very sight had given her the rose crown and brought back Adelius. Even Camelin, one of the great cities of the world, had never seen the likes of their party before. And once inside the 50-foot walls of gray stone, they attracted notice as they crossed the new city along wide, slush-filled streets, bustling with people and carts and wagons. Shopkeepers stood in their doorways and gaped. Wagon drivers reined in their teams to stare. Towering Aiel men and tall maidens eyed them from every corner, it seemed. The people seemed to take no notice of the Aiel, but Elaine did. She loved Avienda as she did herself, more, but she could not love an army of armed Aiel walking Camelin's streets. The inner city, ringed by towered walls of silver-streaked white, was a remembered delight, and Elaine finally began to feel that she was coming home. The streets followed the curves of the hills, and every rise presented a new vista of snow-covered parks and monuments laid out to be seen from above, as well as up close, of brightly tiled towers shining with 100 colors in the afternoon sun. And then the royal palace itself was before them, a confection of pale spires and golden domes and intricate stonework traceries. The banner of Andor waved from nearly every prominence, the white lion on red. And from the others, the dragon banner, or the banner of light. At the tall gilded gates of the palace, Elaine rode forward alone in her travel-stained gray riding dress. Tradition and legend said women who first approached the palace in splendor always failed. She had made clear that she had to do it alone, yet she almost wished Avienda and Brigitte had succeeded in overruling her. Half the 2 dozen guards in front of the gates were Aiel maidens, the others men in blue helmets and blue coats, with a red and gold dragon marching across the chest. "I am Elaine Trakand," she announced loudly, surprised at how calm she sounded. Her voice carried, and across the great plaza people turned from staring at her companions to stare at her. The ancient formula rolled from her tongue. "In the name of House Trakand, by right of descent from Ishara, I have come to claim the Lion Throne of Andor, if the Light wills it so." The gates opened wide. It would not be that easy, of course. Even possession of the palace was not enough to hold the throne of Andor by itself. Passing her companions into the care of an astonished Rhene Harfour, and very pleased to see that the graying first maid, round and as regal as any queen, still had the palace in her capable hands, and a coterie of servants in red and white livery, Elaine hurried to the grand hall, the throne room of Andor, alone again. This was not part of the ritual, not yet. She should have been going to change into the red silk with the pearl-worked bodice and white lions climbing the sleeves, but she felt compelled. This time not even Nynaeve tried to object. White columns, 20 paces high, marched down the sides of the grand hall. The throne room was empty still. That would not last long. Clear afternoon light through the glassed casements in tall windows along the walls mingled with the colored light through the great windows set in the ceiling, where the white lion of Andor alternated with scenes of Andoran victories and the faces of the land's earliest queens, beginning with Ishara herself, as dark as any of the Atha An-Mier, as full of authority as any Aes Sedai. No ruler of Andor could forget herself with the predecessors who had forged this nation staring down at her. One thing she feared to see, the huge monstrosity of a throne, all gilded dragons, that she had seen standing on the dais at the far end of the hall in Tel Iran Riad. It was not there, thank the light. The lion throne no longer rested on a tall plinth like some trophy either, but kept its proper place upon the dais, a massive chair, carved and gilded, but sized for a woman. The white lion, picked out in moonstones on a field of rubies, would stand above the head of any woman who sat there. No man could feel at his ease sitting on that throne, because, so legend said, he would know he had sealed his doom. Elaine thought it more likely the builders had simply made sure a man would not fit on it easily. Climbing the white marble steps of the dais, she laid a hand on one arm of the throne. She had no right to sit on it herself. Not yet. Not until she was acknowledged queen. But taking oaths on the lion throne was a custom as old as Andor. She had to resist the desire to simply fall on her knees and weep into the throne's seat. Reconciled to her mother's death she might be, but this brought back all the pain. She could not break down now. "Under the light, I will honor your memory, mother," she said softly. "I will honor the name of Morghese Trakand, and try to bring only honor to House Trakand. I ordered the guards to keep the curious and the favor-seekers away. I suspected you might want to be alone here for a time." Elaine turned slowly to face Dailin Taravin as the golden-haired woman walked the length of the grand hall. Dailin had been one of her mother's earliest supporters in her own quest for the throne. There was more gray in her hair than Elaine remembered, more lines at the corners of her eyes. She was still quite beautiful, a strong woman, and powerful as friend or foe. She stopped at the foot of the dais, looking up. "I've been hearing for 2 days that you were alive, but I didn't really believe it until now. You've come to accept the throne from the Dragon Reborn, then?" "I claim the throne by my own right, Dailin, with my own hand. The Lion Throne is no bauble to be accepted from a man." Dailin nodded, as at self-evident truth, which it was to any Andoran. "How do you stand, Dailin? With Trakand or against? I have heard your name often on my way here."
"Since you claim the throne by your own right, with..."
Few people could sound as dry as she. Elaine sat down on the top step and motioned the older woman to join her. "There are a few obstacles, of course," Dailin went on as she gathered her blue skirts to sit. "There have been several claimants already, as you may know. Nain and Elenia I have securely locked up, on a charge of treason that most people seem willing to accept, for the time being. Elenia's husband is still active for her, though quietly, and Aramilla has announced a claim, the silly goose. She's getting support of a kind, but nothing that need worry you. Your real worries, aside from Aiel all over the city waiting for the Dragon Reborn to come back, are Aemlyn, Arathel, and Pellavar. For the moment, Luan and Alorion will be behind you, but they might go over to those three." A very succinct list, delivered in a tone suitable for discussing a possible horse race. Nain and Elenia she knew about, if not that Jared still thought his wife had a chance at the throne. Aramilla was a goose to believe she would be accepted, whatever her support. The last 5 names were worrying, though. Each had been as strong a supporter of her mother as had Dailin, and each led a strong house. "So Arathel and Aemlyn want the throne," Elaine murmured. "I can't believe it of Alorion. Not for herself. Pellavar might be acting for one of his daughters, but Luan had only granddaughters, none near old enough. You spoke as if they might unite, all 5 houses. Behind whom?" "That would be a dire threat." Smiling, Dailin propped her chin in her hand. "They seem to think I should have the throne. Now what do you intend about the Dragon Reborn? He hasn't been back here in some time, but he can pop out of the air, it seems." Elaine squeezed her eyes shut for a moment, but when she opened them, she was still sitting on the steps of the dais in the grand hall, and Dailin was still smiling at her. Her brother fought for Elida, and her half-brother was a white cloak. She had filled the palace with women who might turn on one another at any moment, not to mention the fact that one was a dark friend, maybe even Black Aja. And the strongest threat she faced in claiming the throne, a very strong one, stood behind a woman who said she supported Elaine. The world was quite mad. She might as well add her bit. "I mean to bond him my warder," she said, and went on before the other woman could more than blink in astonishment. "I also hope to marry him. Those things have nothing to do with the Lion Throne, however. The very first thing I intend..." As she went on, Dailin began to laugh. Elaine wished she knew whether it was from delight over her plans, or because Dailin saw her own path to the Lion Throne being made smooth. At least she knew what she faced now.
Riding into Camelon, David Hanlon could not help thinking what a city for the looting it was. In his years soldiering, he had seen many villages and towns looted, and once, 20 years ago, a great city, Kyrian, after the Aiel left. Strange that all these Aiel had left Camelin so apparently untouched. But then, if the tallest towers in Carrion had not been burning, it might have been hard to know they had been there. Plenty of gold, among other things, lying about for the picking up, and plenty of men to do the picking. He could see these broad streets full of horsemen and fleeing people, fat merchants who would give up their gold before the knife touched them and hoped their lives would be spared, slim girls and plump women so terrified when they were dragged into a corner that they could hardly manage to squeal, much less struggle. He had seen those things and done them, and he hoped to again. Not in Camelin, though, he admitted with a sigh. If the orders that sent him here had been the sort he could disobey, he would have gone where the pickings might not be so rich, but definitely easier to pluck. His instructions had been clear. Stabling his horse at the Red Bull, in the new city, he walked a mile to a tall stone house on a side street, the house of a wealthy merchant, discreet about her gold, marked with a tiny painted sigil on the doors, a red heart on a golden hand. The hulking fellow who let him in was no merchant's servant, with his sunken knuckles and sullen eyes. Without a word, the huge man led him deeper into the house, then down toward the basements. Hanlon eased his sword in its scabbard. Among the things he had seen were men and women, failures, led to their own very elaborate executions. He did not think he had failed, but then again, he had hardly succeeded. He had followed orders, though, which was not always enough. In the rough stone basement, lit by gilded lamps set all around, his eyes went first to a pretty woman in a lace-trimmed dress of scarlet silk, with her hair caught in frothy lace net. He did not know who this Lady Sheehan was, but his orders had been to obey her. He made his best leg, smiling. She simply looked at him, as if waiting for him to notice what else the basement held. He could hardly have missed it, since except for a few casks, the room held only a large, heavy table, decorated in a very strange fashion. Two ovals had been cut in the tabletop, and from one stuck the head and shoulders of a man, his head wrenched back against the wooden surface and held there by means of leather straps nailed to the tabletop and fastened to a block of wood jammed between his teeth. A woman, prepared the same, provided the other decoration. Beneath the table, they knelt with wrists tied to ankles, quite securely held for any sort of pleasure. The man had a touch of gray in his hair and the face of a lord, but unsurprisingly his deep-set eyes rolled wildly. The woman's hair, spread out on the table, was dark and glossy, but her face was a little long for Hanlon's taste. Suddenly he really saw her face, and his hand leaped to his sword before he could stop it. Releasing the hilt took some effort, which he made pains to hide. An Aes Sedai's face, but an Aes Sedai who let herself be fastened like that was no threat. "So you have some brains," Sheehan said. By her accents she was a noble, and she certainly had the commanding air, sweeping around the table to peer down into the bound man's face. "I asked the great Master Moradin to send me a man with brains. Poor Jacob here has very few." Hanlon frowned and smoothed it away immediately. His orders had come from Ogedion herself. Who in the pit of doom was Moradin? It did not matter. His orders had come from Ogedion, that was enough. The hulking fellow handed Sheehan a funnel, which she fitted into a hole bored through the block of wood between Jacob's teeth. The man's eyes seemed ready to leap from his head. "Poor Jacob here failed very badly," Sheehan said, smiling like a fox looking at a chicken. "Moradin wishes him punished. Poor Jacob does like his brandy." She stepped back, not so far that she could not see clearly, and Hanlon gave a start as the hulking man came to the table with one of the casks. Hanlon did think he could have lifted the thing unaided, but the big man tipped it easily. The bound man shrieked once, and then a streak of dark liquid was pouring from the cask into the funnel, turning his cry to gurgling. The rough smell of crude brandy filled the air. Secured as he was, the man fought, thrashing about, even managing to heave the table sideways, but the brandy kept pouring. Bubbles rose in the funnel as he tried to shout or scream, but the steady stream never faltered. And then his thrashing slowed and stopped. Wide, glazing eyes stared up the ceiling, and brandy trickled from his nostrils. The big fellow still did not stop until the last drops fell from an empty cask.
"I think poor Jacob has finally had enough brandy,"
Sheehan said, and laughed in delight. Hanlon nodded. He supposed the man had, at that. He wondered who he had been. Sheehan was not quite finished. At a gesture from her, the hulking man ripped one of the straps holding the Aes Sedai's gag off of its nail. Hanlon thought the wooden block might have loosened a few of her teeth coming out of her mouth, but if so, she did not waste time on them. She began babbling before the fellow let go of the strap.
"I will obey you," she howled. "I will obey as the great master commanded. He set the shield in me to dissolve so I could obey. He told me so. Let me prove myself. I will crawl. I am a worm, and you are the sun. Oh, please, please, please!"
Sheehan stifled words, if not whimpers, by putting a hand over the Aes Sedai's mouth.
"How do I know you won't fail again, Falian? You have failed before, and Moradin left your punishment to me. He gave me another. Do I need two of you? I may give you a second chance to plead your case, Falian. Perhaps. But if I do, you will have to convince me. I will expect true enthusiasm."
Falian began screaming please again, making extravagant promises the moment Sheehan's hand moved, but soon enough she was reduced to wordless shrieks and tears as the gag was replaced, the nail driven through the strap again, and Jacob's funnel placed above her gaping throat. The hulking man stood another cask on the table beside her head. The Aes Sedai seemed to go mad, bulging eyes rolling, flinging herself about below the table till it trembled. Hanlon was impressed. An Aes Sedai must be harder to break than a plump merchant or his round-cheeked daughter. Still, she had had the help of one of the Chosen, it seemed. Realizing that Sheehan was looking at him, he stopped smiling down at Falian. His first rule in life was never to offend those the Chosen set above him.
"Tell me, Hanlon," Sheehan said, "how would you like to put your hands on a queen?"
He licked his lips in spite of himself.
A queen?
That he had never done.
Chapter 29. A Cup of Sleep. "Don't be an utter woolhead, Rand," Min said. Making herself remain seated, she crossed her legs and kicked her foot idly, but she could not keep exasperation out of her voice. "Go to her, speak to her." "Why?" he snapped. "I know which letter to believe now. It's better this way. She's safe now, from anyone who wants to strike at me. Safe from me. It's better." But he stalked up and down in his shirt sleeves between the two rows of chairs in front of the dragon throne, his fists white-knuckle hard, glaring to beat the black clouds beyond the casements that were laying a new blanket of snow on Kyrian. Min exchanged looks with Fedwin Moore, who stood by the sun-carved doors. The maidens now let anyone who was not an obvious threat walk in unannounced, but those Rand did not want to see this morning would be turned away by the husky boy. He wore the dragon and sword on his black collar, and Min knew he had already seen more battles, more horror than most men three times his age, yet he was a boy. Today, casting uneasy glances at Rand, he seemed younger than ever. The sword on his hip still looked out of place to her. "The dragon reborn is a man, Fedwin," she said. "And like any man, he's sulking because he thinks a woman doesn't want to see him again." Goggling, the boy jerked as if she had goosed him. Rand stopped to scowl at her sullenly. All that kept her from laughing was knowing that he was hiding pain as real as any stab wound. That and the sure knowledge that he would be as hurt if she had done what had been done. Not that she would ever have the chance to rip down his banners, but the point applied. Rand had been stunned at first by the news Time brought from Camelin at dawn, but as soon as the man left he had stopped looking like a pole-axed bull and started this. Standing, she adjusted her pale green coat, folded her arms beneath her breasts, and confronted him directly. "What else can it be?" she asked calmly. Well, she tried for calm and almost made it. She loved the man, but after a morning of this, she wanted to box his ears soundly. "You haven't mentioned Matt twice, and you don't know whether he's even alive."
"Matt's alive," Rand snarled. "I'd know if he was dead. What do you mean, I'm—"
His jaw clenched as if he could not make himself say the word. "Sulking," she provided. "Soon you'll be pouting. Some women think men are prettier when they pout. I'm not one of them." Well, enough of that. His face had darkened, and he was not blushing. "Haven't you twisted yourself into knots to make sure she got the throne of Andor? Which is hers by right, might I add. Didn't you say you wanted her to have Andor whole, not ripped apart like Kyrian or Tyr?"
"I did," he roared. "And now it's hers, and she wants me out of it. Good enough, I say. And don't tell me again to stop shouting. I'm not—"
He realized that he was, and clamped his teeth shut. A low growl came from his throat. Moore set to studying one of his buttons, twisting it back and forth. He'd been doing a lot of that this morning. Min kept her face smooth. She was not going to slap him, and he was too big for her to spank. "Andor is hers, just as you wanted," she said, calmly, almost. "None of the Forsaken are going after her, now she's torn your banners down." A dangerous light appeared in those blue-gray eyes, but she pressed on. "Just as you wanted, and you can't believe she's siding with your enemies. Andor will follow the Dragon Reborn, and you know it. So the only reason for you to be in a snit is because you think she doesn't want to see you. Go to her, you fool." The next part was the hardest to say. "Before you can say two words, she'll be kissing you." Light. She loved Elaine almost as much as she did Rand. Maybe as much, in a very different way. But how was a woman to compete with a beautiful golden-haired queen who had a powerful nation at her beck and call?
"I am not angry," Rand said in a tight voice, and started pacing again.
Min considered kicking him square in the bottom, hard. One of the doors opened to admit leathery, white-haired Sorrelia, who brushed Moore aside even as he was looking to see whether Rand wanted her allowed entry. Rand opened his mouth, angrily, whatever he chose to claim, and five women in thick black robes damp with melted snow followed the wise one into the room, hands folded, eyes down, and deep hoods not quite hiding their faces. Their feet were wrapped in rags. Min's scalp prickled. To her eyes, images and auras danced and vanished and were replaced around all six women, just as around Rand. She had been hoping he had forgotten those five were alive. What in the name of the light was that wicked old woman doing? Sorrelia gestured once in a clatter of gold and ivory bracelets, and the five hastily arranged themselves in a line atop the golden rising sun set in the stone floor. Rand strode along that row, stripping back hoods, bearing faces that he stared into cold-eyed. Every one of the black-robed women was unwashed, her hair lank and dirty with sweat. Elza Penfell, a green sister, met his gaze eagerly, a strangely fervent look on her face. Nasoon Bihara, a slender brown, studied him as intently as he did her. Serene Nemdal, so beautiful even in her dirt that you thought her agelessness must be natural, appeared to be holding to her white Aja coolness by a fingernail. Beldine Nyrum, too new to the shawl to have the ageless features, essayed an uncertain smile that melted under his stare. Arian Borrelius, pale and almost as lovely as Serene, flinched, then visibly forced herself to look into that frigid gaze. Those last two also were green, and all five had been among the sisters who kidnapped him on Elida's orders. Some had been among those who tortured him while trying to carry him to Tar Valon. Sometimes Rand still woke, sweating and panting, mumbling about being confined, being beaten. Min hoped she did not see murder in his stare.
"These were named Datsang, Randall Thor," Sorrelia said. "I think they feel their shame in the bone now. Arian Borrelius was the first to ask to be beaten as you were, sunrise and sunset, but now each has done so. That plea has been granted. Each has asked to serve you however she may. The To for their betrayal cannot be met." Her voice darkened for a moment.
To the Aiel, the betrayal of the kidnapping was far worse than what they had done after. Yet they know their shame, and they wish to try. We have decided to leave the choice to you. Min frowned. Leave the choice to him? Wise ones rarely left any choice they could make to anyone else. Sorrelia never did. The sinewy wise one casually shifted her dark shawl on her shoulders and watched Rand, as if this was of no importance at all. But she shot one blue ice glance at Min, and suddenly Min was sure that if she said the wrong thing here, that bony old woman would have her hide. It was not a viewing. She just knew Sorrelia better than she wanted to by now. Determinedly, she set to studying what was appearing and vanishing around the women. No easy task when they stood so close together she could not be certain whether a particular image belonged to one woman or the woman next to her. At least the auras were always certain. Light. Let her be able to understand at least some of what she saw. Rand took Soralia's announcement coolly, on the surface. He rubbed his hands together slowly, then thoughtfully examined the herons branded on his palms. He examined each of those Aes Sedai faces in turn. Finally, he focused on Arian.
Why? He asked her in a mild voice. I killed two of your warders.
Why? Min winced. Rand was many things, but seldom mild, and Arian was one of the few who had beaten him more than once. The pale Ilianer sister straightened. Images danced, and auras flashed and were gone. Nothing Min could read. Dirty-faced and her long black hair matted, Arian gathered Aes Sedai authority around her and met his gaze levelly. But her answer came simply and directly. We did be wrong in taking you. I have considered long on it. You must fight the last battle, and we must help you. If you will no accept me, I do understand, but I will help as you do require if you will allow. Rand stared at her without expression. He put that same one-word question to each, and their answers were as different as the women. The green is the battle, Aja, Beldine told him proudly, and despite smudges on her cheeks and dark circles beneath her eyes, she did look a queen of battles. But then Saldaean women seemed to find that second nature. When you go to Tarmon Gaiden, the green must be there. I will follow, if you will accept me. Light! She was going to bond an Ashaman as a warder. How? No, it was not important now. What we did was logical at the time. Serene's tightly held, cool serenity slipped into clear worry, and she shook her head. I say that to explain, not to exculpate. Circumstances have changed. For you, the logical course might seem to... She drew a decidedly unsteady breath. Images and auras. A tempestuous love affair of all things. The woman was ice, however beautiful, and there was nothing useful in knowing some man would melt her. To send us back to captivity, she went on, or even execute us. For me, logic says I must serve you. Nassoon tilted her head, and her nearly black eyes seemed to be trying to store away every scrap of him. One red and green aura spoke of honors and fame. A huge building appeared above her head and vanished, a library she would found. I want to study you, she said simply. I can hardly do that carrying stones or digging holes. They do leave plenty of time for thought, but serving you seems a fair exchange for what I might learn. Rand blinked at the directness of that, but otherwise his expression did not alter. The most surprising answer came from Elsa, in her manner of delivery more than the words. Sinking to her knees, she gazed up at Rand with feverish eyes. Her whole face seemed to shine with fervor. Auras flared and images cascaded around her, telling nothing. You are the dragon reborn, she said breathlessly. You must be there for the last battle. I must help you be there. Whatever is necessary, I will do. And she flung herself face down, pressing her lips to the polished stone floor in front of his boots. Even Sorrelia looked taken aback, and Serene's mouth dropped open. Moor gaped at her and hastily returned to twisting his button. Min thought he giggled nervously, almost under his breath. Turning on his heel, Rand stalked halfway to the dragon throne, where his scepter and the crown of Ilion rested atop his gold-embroidered red coat. His face was so bleak that men wanted to rush to him, no matter who was watching, but she continued to study the Aes Sedai and Sorrelia. She had never seen anything really useful around that white-haired harridan. Abruptly, Rand turned back, striding toward the line of women so quickly that Beldine and Serene stepped back. A sharp gesture from Sorrelia jerked them into place again.
"Would you accept being confined in a box?"
His voice grated, stone grinding on frozen stone.
"Locked in a chest all day, and beaten before you go in and when you come out?"
That was what they had done to him.
"Yes,"
Elza moaned against the floor.
"Whatever I must do, I will." "If you do require it,"
Arian managed shakily, and faces aghast, the others nodded slowly. Min stared in amazement, knotting her fists in her coat pockets. That he might think of getting his own back in the same manner seemed almost natural, but she had to stop it somehow. She knew him better than he did himself. She knew where he was hard as a knife blade, and where he was vulnerable no matter how he denied it. He would never forgive himself this. But how? Fury contorted his face, and he shook his head as he did when arguing with that voice he heard. He muttered one word aloud that she understood. Taviran. Sorrelia stood there calmly examining him as closely as Nassoon did. Not even the threat of the chest shook the brown. Except for Elza, still moaning and kissing the floor, the others were hollow-eyed, as if seeing themselves doubled up and bound as he had been. Among all of those images spilling around Rand and the women, suddenly an aura flashed, blue and yellow tinged with green, encompassing them all, and Min knew its meaning. She gasped, half in surprise, half in relief.
"They will serve you, each in her fashion, Rand," she said hurriedly. "I saw it."
Sorrelia would serve him? Suddenly Min wondered exactly what "in her fashion" meant. The words came with the knowing, but she did not always know what the words themselves meant. But they would serve. That much was plain. The fury drained from Rand's face as he silently studied the Aes Sedai. Some of them glanced at Min with raised eyebrows, obviously marveling that a few words from her carried so much weight. But for the most part they watched Rand and hardly seemed to breathe. Even Elza lifted her head to gaze up at him. Sorrelia gave Min one quick look and the faintest nod. Approving, Min thought. So the old woman pretended not to care one way or the other, did she? At last Rand spoke. "You can swear to me as Kiruna and the others did. That or go back to wherever the wise ones have been keeping you. I'll accept nothing less." Despite a hint of demand in his voice, he looked as if he, too, did not care, arms folded, eyes impatient. The oath he demanded of them came out in a rush. Min did not expect quibbles, not after her viewing, yet it was still a surprise when Elza scrambled up to her knees and the others lowered themselves to theirs. In ragged unison, five more Aes Sedai swore, under the light and by their hope of salvation, to serve the Dragon Reborn faithfully until the last battle had come and gone. Nassoon delivered the words as though examining each one, Serene as if stating a principle of logic, Elza wearing a wide, victorious smile, but they all swore. How many Aes Sedai would he gather around him? With the oath, Rand seemed to lose interest. "Find them clothes and put them with your other apprentices," he told Sorrelia absently. He was frowning, but not at her or the Aes Sedai.
"How many do you think you'll end up with?"
Min almost jumped at the echo of her own thought. "However many are necessary," Sorrelia said dryly. "I think more will come." She clapped her hands once and gestured, and the five sisters sprang to their feet. Only Nassoon looked surprised at the alacrity with which they had obeyed. Sorrelia smiled, a very satisfied smile for an Aiel, and Min did not think it was caused by the other women's obedience. Nodding, Rand turned away. He was already beginning to pace again, already beginning to scowl over Elaine. Min settled into her chair once more, wishing she had one of Master Fell's books to read, or to throw at Rand. Well, one of Master Fell's to read, and someone else's to throw. Sorilea herded the black-clad sisters out of the room, but at the last she paused with one hand holding a door and looked back at Ran striding away from her toward the gilded throne. Her lips pursed thoughtfully. "That woman, Cadswain Melaidrin, is beneath this roof again today," she said at last to his back. "I think she believes you are afraid of her, Randall Thor, the way you avoid her whereabouts." With that she left. For a long moment Rand stood staring at the throne, or maybe at something beyond it. Abruptly he gave himself a shake and strode the remaining distance to pick up the crown of swords. On the point of setting it on his head, though, he hesitated, then put it back. Donning the coat, he left crown and scepter where they lay. "I mean to find out what Cadswain wants," he announced. "She doesn't come to the palace every day because she likes a trip through the snow. Will you come with me, Min? Maybe you'll have a viewing." She was on her feet faster than any of those Aes Sedai. A visit with Cadswain would likely be as pleasurable as a visit with Sorilea, yet anything was better than sitting there alone. Besides, maybe she would have a viewing. Fedwin fell in behind her and Rand with an alert look in his eyes. The six maidens outside in the tall, vaulted hallway rose, but they did not follow. Somara was the only one Min knew. She gave Min a brief smile, and Rand a flat, disapproving stare. The others glowered. The maidens had accepted his explanation about why he had gone without them in the first place, so any watchers would believe for as long as possible that he was still in Cairhien. But they still demanded to know why he had not sent for them afterward, and Rand had had no answers. He muttered something under his breath and quickened his pace, so Min had to stretch her legs to keep up. "Watch Cadswain carefully, Min," he said, "and you too, Mor. She's up to some Aes Sedai scheme, but burn me if I can see what. I don't know. There's..." A stone wall seemed to strike Min from behind. She thought she heard roaring, crashing. And then Rand was turning her over. She was lying on the floor, looking down at her with the first fear she remembered seeing in those morning blue eyes. It only faded when she sat up, coughing. The air was full of dust. And then she saw the corridor. The maidens were gone from in front of Rand's doors.